91.7 WVXU, Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Today is Earth Day. It all started on April 22nd, 1970. This year, more than a billion people from 190 countries are expected to participate in this day of taking action to clean up and improve their communities. But how far have we come in the past 44 years? We're going to talk about that today, and then later in the hour, remembering Covington artist Frank Duveneck. But first, joining me to talk about Earth Day are Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director Thane Maynard, Zoo Sustainability Coordinator Sophia Cifuentes, and Executive Director of Green Umbrella Regional Sustainability Alliance Brewster Rhodes. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day. There you go. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about how far we've come and how things have changed. And as we were getting ready to prep for the show, Brewster tells us he attended the very first Earth Day events. Tell us what it was like
just
in 1970.
Just shows you how old I am. I was a freshman in college, and I grew up in Philadelphia. And the Earth Day celebration, the first one, was held there at the Art Museum, where Rocky stood at the top of the steps. I'll never forget it. So anyway, it was a very exciting time, of course. And imagine all the changes that have happened in the world, in the country, and even in Cincinnati since then. So,
what was the biggest focus at that time?
Well, you had Superfund sites left and right. Clean water was a huge problem. You had tremendous pollution in almost every urban riverway in the country and the world. Air pollution was a massive problem in our cities throughout the United States. And, of course, we see that happening all over the world right now. Boy, I'll tell you, there was we had huge crises in the environment, and toxic pollution coming out of rivers and coming out of pipes from factories into the riverways. I mean, it was so blatant and bold. And people just said, hey, this is crazy. Enough is enough. And, major studies came out and books, of course, saying, hey, we got to get a handle on this because it's killing us right now. And that was in many ways the birth of the environmental movement with Earth Day in 1970.
Thane, have you noticed a lot of changes in that time? Do you think that things are better than they were in 1970?
I think there have been lots of gains. For instance, right following those early initiatives were big progressive movements of leadership in the United States that led to the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act of 1973, and those are three of the most important pieces of legislation in the world talking about how can we live more sustainably. That's not just good for bald eagles, which, by the way, those laws help save, but it's good for people too. We all need clean water and clean air.
Mm-hmm. Sophia, what kind of work do you think is being done today to really make a difference?
I think we're starting early with education and getting into schools and starting that conversation with our youth who are they're the ones that are going to take over when we're gone. And just starting that conversation from day one, I think, has been huge in getting people inspired and passionate about taking care of the earth.
So awareness, do you think, is that as big a part of Earth Day as anything else, is just making people aware of what's going on?
I think aware of that, but also aware of how they can play a role. Mm-hmm. The world's not going to get saved by the World Wildlife Fund, for instance, or the United Nations. It's going to get saved by billions of better decisions every single day, and we all play a role in that.
Yeah. Conservation definitely starts with people. So the more we can get together with people and make that happen, we'll start to see some change.
Yeah, Aunt Marianne, there's a fine line between scaring the living bejesus out of folks about how bad things are and giving people opportunities in very concrete ways to do their fair share to improve the quality of the environment in their own world, in their own household, in their own block, in their own community, in their own state and region. And really, that's, I think, what so many of us are all about, whether it's the zoo educating young and old who come there about things they can do in their day-to-day lives with recycling and better use of water and energy. That help people feel hopeful that they can make a difference and impact the changes that are necessary.
Thinking back to the 1960s and 70s, I grew up in some of those times, and I remember things like litter. It wasn't that big a deal. If you had a piece of gum, you threw your gum wrapper out the window of the car when you were driving. It just nobody really thought about it. And then the push came on, oh my gosh, litter's really a big problem. I don't think people are as likely to do that sort of thing. I mean, even those things, do you think we've come far just with little things like litter? Or do you think it's still bad?
I think it depends where you are. But overall, I definitely think, when it comes to litter, recycling, even saving water, I think a lot of people are more aware and anxious to do their part and take some action.
And you know, it's the kids who are leading us. You know, when if a parent throws a piece of paper out the window, it's the kid who says, "That's wrong, Dad, Mom. Let's go pick that up. That's not right." And you know, you were talking about education. That's the most important thing, and the kids shall lead us in this effort. My own kids are incredibly environmentally aware and responsible, and that's a testament to their educators and community leaders like you all to Zoo.
I think today you won't see many kids who don't know about recycling and about, you know, my daughter insisted we put all the shower heads on that save mm-hmm. water and all those sorts of things. And that didn't happen years ago. Do you think as these kids continue to grow up that some of that will be so common that we won't be even think about it anymore because it'll be so just matter of fact?
I do. I think it'll happen from lots of sources. A lot of life is sort of selective pressure and market driven. As the price of water goes up dramatically, which it is in the Cincinnati region, everybody would be saying, you know, it would be great if I could figure out how to save 25% on my water bill, right, because it's a big bill. Much the same way with fuel efficiency in cars or putting in a newer furnace. It's a win-win. You know, Cincinnati Zoo is very fortunate to be nationally renowned as the greenest zoo in America. That's thanks to FIA, thanks to Mark Fisher, who she works with, but everybody at the zoo getting on board saying, how do we save resources? It used to be 20 years ago, people said, gosh, it's too expensive to do these fancy systems. Now it's too expensive to use old-fashioned systems that waste energy and water.
You talked about super funds, and we've talked about litter and all these sorts of things that were big issues and factories belching smoke and that back in the 60s and 70s. What are some of the biggest problems that the Earth is facing right now?
Ooh, that's a good question, Marianne. I think overconsumption and overpopulation is a big one. It's affecting the biodiversity of the habitats around the world. And just looking at how we're using these resources, you know, do we need to continue to keep buying new or could we reuse or recycle old? And as we're building new buildings, could we do it in a more sustainable way? Or as we're buying new products, could they be earth-friendly or eco-friendly? And, you know, in our region, stormwater management is a big challenge that we're facing with, you know, all of this water going into one combined sewer overflow. So how can we address that challenge?
You know, I think it's good to give people lots of options so they can make better choices. One thing we found at the zoo, whether it's talking about conservation or it's talking about eating correctly, you know, obviously in our region, obesity is a huge issue. We've come to realize in both cases, folks don't like to be told what to do or what not to do, but instead been given options and out of that can make really good choices.
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, we also have a huge problem of energy generation in the world, with coal still being such a leading generator of electricity, especially in the developing world. You look at what's going on in China. I mean, imagine living in China right now, given the incredible air pollution where literally you cannot go outside. Especially if you have any kind of respiratory issue. We had an exchange student living with us from Shanghai for a year, and she was just blown away by how clean the air was in Cincinnati. And some of us are concerned from time to time that we're not as clean, but just by way of comparison. And of course, they are working rapidly to phase out nuclear plants, although they're still building one at the rate of one per week while they're jacking up their renewable energy generation. But we need to get make progress faster, more efficiently in energy generation that's renewable around the world.
When you talk about some parts of the world that the pollution is so much worse than it is in the United States, where does the U.S. fall? Are there countries that are a whole lot cleaner than the U.S. too?
Well, you hear a great deal about some of the Northern European countries, and to their credit, they do a lot of things quite well. Some of that is that they're very finite themselves and have all sorts of individual pressures. Some of the Scandinavian countries, for instance, and Germany, which is a high-latitude country, has the highest per capita generation of solar power anywhere in the world, which is intriguing when you think of parts of the world that have a whole lot more solar energy opportunity. So they do make some progress, but I would say this. It's a very much an American thing to play a leadership role in conservation. We long have early leaders in that. Some were politicians like Teddy Roosevelt. Some were people that helped teach politicians like John Muir. But for well more than 150 years, this country's played a leadership role and needs to going forward. if we're going to have the laws that we need to protect wildlife and protect human lives.
One of the things that seems to have been brought to attention over the past several years, just the whole idea of oil spills, and there's been a number of them lately, and that's really caused a lot of concern for wildlife in those areas and people as well. Would you say that that's one of the bigger problems right now, or are there others that are even greater?
Well, Brewster, you're a river guy. Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, obviously we have had oil spills. We've had coal slurry spills that have affected the Ohio. We shut down the intake valves for about 24, 48 hours coming through from Cincinnati Water Works most recently when the contamination came down the river from that incident. But the good news is that there's been far fewer of those kinds of crises or incidents that have happened. We don't have pipes that deliver toxic and other kinds of contaminants directly into waterways in this country. We have a huge problem, though, with farmland runoff that obviously is creating problems with the quality of the water. And algae blooms on Lake Erie are a huge problem. We brought the lake back, and now it's being threatened once again. And the Ohio River a couple of years ago had a serious challenge in that regard as well. So the problems tend to shift. Once we address one, another one pops up. But that just means we have to be as vigilant as we possibly can and look for creative win-win solutions that help farmers do a better job of growing food efficiently and effectively without contaminating the waterways. And everybody's trying to figure out how to be supportive of those kind of solutions.
For people that don't know, you paddle the Ohio every day. Is that?
Nah, not quite. Come on.
Not every day? Really? I thought you did.
No, I try, but it's a crazy schedule.
Nearly.
So, yeah,
every day.
I get out as often as I can. So
many times a week. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, fine.
And you've been doing that for how many years?
Oh, about 1983 or so. I don't know, whatever that is.
Thirty years. How's the river changed? What do you see differences in what you see now than when you started?
It's a little hard to recall what it was like 30 years ago. But I mean, clearly, I mean, there are days, and this is partly because there's lack of rain during the dry spells. But you can see 3 or 4 feet down, which is pretty amazing. So the clarity of the water is directly dependent, obviously, on rainfall. But you know, I've seen more beaver in the last 5 years than ever.
Really?
There are beaver right down. Town directly across the river from the boathouse in front of the chart house and Joe's Crab Shack. And, you know, when the water comes up, the beaver go in there and clean out a bunch of the underbrush and just fresh cuts. And it's just and occasionally, like maybe once a month, I'll be paddling and all of a sudden splash right in front of me is a beaver. And I follow him for a couple hundred yards. It's just fascinating. In fact, you know, you can close your eyes and just imagine Lewis and Clark coming down the river once again, and, you know, from 1803, because so much of the licking, especially even though it's right downtown, is just like it probably just it looks in so many ways like it was 200 years ago.
Well, that's interesting to me, and I guess I don't know enough about wildlife to know what good does a beaver do in a river? Why is that a good thing? I know because it can be sustained, but do
sure.
they do work?
Well, in natural ecosystems, the more diversity you have, the better. They can affect, of course, the shoreline itself and the plants that live and thrive there. But the comeback of species on an industrial and urban river like the Ohio is really saying something. For instance, the bald eagle, which just 40 years ago was in essence gone from the state of Ohio. There were 4 pairs still up on Lake Erie, but they were unable to lay eggs because of DDT poisoning and pollution in the water. Last spring, Ohio Division of Wildlife counted 185 successful bald eagle nests just in the state of Ohio. Significant to Brewster's story, one of those was right on the Ohio River, the first time in 50 years that bald eagles had nested again. It was out in Brown County, right on the shore of the Ohio River. That's an indicator of clearer water, more fish toward the top, and a healthier system.
Thane, I think there's one near California Woods. I saw a bald eagle flying on Kellogg Avenue about 5 weeks ago by the ball fields. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
that's a great sign.
That is so great. Yeah. So species can make a comeback, not by chance, by the kinds of laws we talked about, by cleaning up ecosystems, but the animals themselves are an indicator of the health of that river.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about Earth Day and how far we've come since the first Earth Day in 1970. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Today is Earth Day, and we're talking about what's happened since the first Earth Day in 1970. Joining me are Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director Thane Maynard, Zoo Sustainability Coordinator Sophia Cifuentes, and Executive Director of Green Umbrella Regional Sustainability Alliance, Brewster Rhodes. We'd like to hear from you, too. If you have a question or a comment, call us 513-419-7100. Or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We were talking about beavers and eagles and bald eagles and all sorts of things coming back to the area. If you have something in your neighborhood that you're surprised is back again, let us know about that as well. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. There are things going on around the world and certainly in our area. And Sophia, why don't you talk a little bit about a wetland you've been working on in Warren County?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and talking about wildlife returning to areas once they've been cleaned up, we've been instrumental in a wetland that's in Warren County. It's on our EcoHio farm. And, you know, for years, this area was just farmed in a monoculture way, just, you know, two or three different crops, not necessarily sustainable. We're able to reclaim 24 acres of that area and turn it back into its original wetland. And so we've been seeing over the past 2 years wildlife that hasn't been seen in this area for a number of years starting to return, like different types of birds, sandhill cranes, and a lot of waterfowl, different species. We're hoping beaver would come back, and certainly different reptiles and amphibians. And we've been working a lot with our zoo staff to do bio blitzes to see, you know, what was there 3 or 4 years ago versus what's there now. And it's amazing to see just the increase of species. I think we're up to 200 different species of birds. And
how quickly does that kind of turnover happen? Is that something that happens very quickly, or is it going to be 10, 15, 20 years? I mean, you're seeing obviously some now.
I mean, it's been probably about 2 years since we've started, and it's already rapidly, you know, the wildlife is rapidly increasing. So if it's a healthy system, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Where do they come from?
You know, well, the hope for the future of the world is based on that very concept. Nature is built to be resilient. You know, a huge storm comes through, knocks down a big tree. You think, oh, what a tragedy. Except for all the little trees that are like, I'm glad that thing's out of the way. I could use some sunshine. And if the ecosystem's healthy, it'll grow back together. Much the same way if you cut yourself, it'll heal itself. Miraculously, that's how the world is built. In the case of this wetland, both short-term and long-term, the comeback is remarkable. Many of the animal species fly back in, come back in. Some of the amphibians are brought in the form of eggs or tadpoles on the legs of birds that fly in. But the most amazing to me is if you go out to that wetland with one of the botanists from the zoo's botanical garden, they'll point out plants that are coming up through these soggy areas that hadn't been there for more than 50 years since it was drained. But the roots had been waiting underground until they'd be moist again, and boop, they come back up. You think, you've got to be kidding me.
So they just lay dormant all that time?
Some plants do. It's an amazing, amazing phenomenon to observe, and it's building year by year in terms of diversity and the things that they spot. So, and again, we're not talking about, you know, a gigantic swamp. I think it's 28 acres, and yet just remarkable how much of a comeback it's staged in less than 2 years.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Matt called from Mainville, and he wants to make sure we're aware that he drives 52 almost daily, and he says he sees the bald eagle, and there's a massive nest, which is very impressive.
So there you go.
Take a look on 52 when you're driving, and maybe you'll get to see that
as well. You know, Marion, just stepping back for a second, thinking about where we are after, you know, 44 years, you know, I guess it was since, wow, it's amazing, mm-hmm. since the first Earth Day. You know, the environmental movement has really become a movement for global sustainability. It's not just those of us who care deeply about the quality of the natural world of rivers and streams and biodiversity, but it's become a sort of an economic necessity for businesses large and small, for local governments, for major institutions to figure out how they can save energy, save water, reduce their waste, et cetera, and run their operations much more efficiently. So the zoo is doing this because it's a great example to train and teach other people, but it's also, as you're saying, Thane, it's an economic necessity. Why mm-hmm. would you spend – why would you not fix the problem that is costing you a lot of money when your pipes are leaking all the time, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
So major companies, Procter & Gamble, I was just there today, they are working hard worldwide to reduce their water consumption, their energy consumption, their waste disposal because it saves the money. It also helps to send a message to the marketplace that they get it and to their own employees that they are a company that has values that make it worthwhile for them as employees to work for them. So we're seeing that throughout this greater Cincinnati region, and it's very exciting. We are far more on the cutting edge as a region than most people give us credit for. The article in today's Enquirer, I think, points out the ways that we are much greener than most people think, and we can talk about that.
What do you think are the reasons we're more green?
Well, all sorts of things, as folks have seen in the paper this week. City Council is hard after the question of should we add more bike lanes right here in front of the station on Central Parkway, which I think is a terrific idea to start to really provide thoroughfares, as there are some up by the university and the zoo, as there are as you go out Erie Ave going east and other parts of town, that really can become safe and convenient thoroughfares for bike commuters, which we see much more of as we go. And making that safer and easier works better for car drivers and much better for bike commuters as well.
I think certainly Green Umbrella has done quite a bit, you know, being our regional sustainability alliance, bringing all of these businesses and organizations working together collectively to have that impact on our region is tremendous.
Well, we're trying to make progress, but I think part of what we're trying to do is help people understand what are the assets we currently have. We want to have one of the most impressive park systems, not only in the city, but Hamilton County and in northern Kentucky as well. We have one of the highest tree canopies in the entire country for an urban area. We have one of the most the greatest number of LEED certified residential and commercial buildings of cities in the country. We're in the top ranking. When it comes to the deployment of solar energy, we're ranked number 24 in the country per capita with solar energy deployment. That's huge. We talked about the paddling and the natural waterways. We're the center for freshwater research in America with the EPA lab here in Cincinnati, and the idea of taking those technologies and sending them out into the marketplace to start small businesses that are helping to address worldwide issues of water pollution. So we are much more on the cutting edge than most people think, and that's good for business, good for attracting and retaining talent. I want my kids to come back to it. They want to come to the city which is really happening and vital and exciting. And the sustainability movement we have here is part of that mix.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Kimberly is calling from Florence. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi there.
What's your question?
My question is about, I know you have been talking about Cincinnati and reinventing the wetlands to what they should be. My question is primarily around the zoo and how they ensure that all the variety of animals or the different animals are sustainably collected and how they can prevent poaching in third world countries to obtain animals that aren't necessarily belong in this climate.
You know, that's a good question because poaching around the world, particularly for many large mammals, remains a terrible problem. Not poaching for zoos, but in the case of elephants for ivory, rhinos for their horns, tigers for their bones, it's a much bigger problem today than anyone would have imagined it still would be. A lot of that is for illegal trade on markets, black markets around the world. Kimberly, in accredited zoos like Cincinnati Zoo and the ones across North America that are accredited, animals are not taken out of the wild willy-nilly. In fact, endangered animals are not taken out of the wild at all unless there's very special circumstances, such as our manatees at our Manatee Springs exhibit. Those are wild animals that need to be rescued, and they come to our zoo for a year to 2 years, either if they've been hit by a boat or caught in cold water and got stressed. And then we put them on a DHL freighter and fly them back and let them loose and bring others in. But that question that you brought up of illegal consumption, overconsumption, whether it's small animals like birds or monkeys or big animals like elephants, does remain a problem. And zoos across North America are certainly working with those countries to try to discourage poaching.
Does that answer your question, Kimberly?
To a certain extent, yes. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Again, our number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment as we talk about Earth Day today. One of the things that I think a lot of people would like to know is what can they do right in their own homes to make a difference every day? And, you know, they're not necessarily going to build a wetland and they're not necessarily going to, do some of these major projects that your organizations take on. But what can the average person do every day to make a difference?
I think just making those small changes, you know, stuff that we've heard as a kid, turn the lights off, turn the water off while you're brushing your teeth or washing your hands, take shorter showers, get outside, you know, unplug a little bit and just play outside, get outside, go for a walk, plant a garden. We've got a great Earth Day event this Thursday at the zoo, Party for the Planet. It's our fifth annual. It takes place from 4 to 8:30, and we'll have 35 exhibitors on hand to do exactly this, show homeowners and individuals how they can go green in their own homes, from recycling, composting, energy efficiency, water efficiency. We've got great rain barrels on display that will be auctioned off between...
How does a rain barrel work?
A rain barrel is one of the, I think, one of the most simplest ways you can conserve water for your garden. It's just, think of a trash can that's attached to your downspout, collects water that runs off your roof, and you've got a spigot or a hose connected to it, and you can use that water to water your garden or your lawn. About 1,000 gallons of water per summer could be saved per rain barrel.
And then you would just use it as you need it. Obviously, right mm-hmm. after it rains, you don't need to water. The water doesn't evaporate. It'll stay there for a while.
It will stay there for a while. And the ones we have at the zoo have a planter on top, so you can even grow flowers or herbs right there and use the water from the barrel onto that planter.
How expensive is it to put something like that together? Are rain barrels expensive?
$50 to $80. It depends how fancy you want to get. You can build your own, you know, do some do-it-yourself kind of rain barrel for $50 to $80, or you can get something that's a little more high-tech for
$100. But you do want to attach it to a downspout because that's where you're going to get the majority of the water. If you just set it out when it rains, you're not going to get
exactly.
Right. You want that rainwater to come off your roof.
But there are other things, of course, people can do in addition to the wonderful list that Fia just laid out. For example, recycling electronics. I mean, a lot of that, your TVs and your old computers and cell phones and wires end up often just going into the trash and end up in a landfill, and they'll be around here 1,000 years from now. And so we want to encourage everybody to properly recycle that electronic waste, I would argue. And in fact, next week from the 1st through the 4th of May, Greenboro is participating with a broad cross-section of folks, including the Reds, for a major e-waste recycling drive. The information is on our website at greenumbrella.org. But last year, we collected 8 53-foot tractor-trailer trucks of TVs and computers and monitors at 4 locations throughout the region. So it's a great opportunity to take advantage of. And you get free Reds tickets. Can't go wrong. So that's a concrete example.
And that's coming up when?
It's the 1st through the 4th of May. Each day is a different location. From the Coleraine Avenue on Thursday and in Westchester on Friday and in High Park on Saturday and Newport Pavilion on Sunday. That's the 1st through the 4th of May.
I want to remind everybody, we do have links on our website to all of your information. You can find that there at WVXU.org. Just time for one more quick question, and this is from Ray from Milan, Indiana, and it's a big question. We don't have a lot of time to answer it, but talking about fracking and that activity, and is wondering if that kind of activity is negating all the good that's going on.
Well, it very well may. Fracking is not an issue for us directly here in that fracking itself is not happening in the ground in this area. We are, however, an area that's been looked at very carefully for deep well injection of the fracking water that may be shipped down the Ohio by barge for offloading and deep well injection in this part of the country. And there are serious issues, obviously. And in fact, just recently, the Department of Natural Resources determined that fracking wells did in fact create a series of small earthquakes in Youngstown 2 weeks ago. It was a very big decision by ODNR, the first time that's been determined. So there are serious issues that need to be really looked at very carefully about whether that's a safe, environmentally safe method of getting energy out of the ground.
Thank you all for being here. We're out of time. It goes so fast.
Yeah, Marianne, thanks. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
Thank you so much. We've been talking about Earth Day with Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director Thane Maynard, Zoo Sustainability Coordinator Sophia Cifuentes, and Executive Director of Green Umbrella Regional Sustainability Alliance, Brewster Rhodes. In a moment, looking back on the life and works of Covington-born artist Frank Duveneck. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.